from the Radio Ranch in the heart of Liberty, Texas. It's the Bombastic Blogcast for Thursday, January 2nd, 2025. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
Be there yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, the kid with the patriotic red, white, and blue eyes, and one heck of a nice guy. Ask anybody, they'll tell you. Let's get things officially started with
the Daily Datagram.
You got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. I like this one. It says, history repeats itself, but each time the price goes up. Especially if you keep electing Democrats. And if you have to ask how much, you obviously can't afford it.
You know, sometimes it just gets hard to smile through it when they ask you to bend down and grab your ankles.
Let's move along now with the so-called educational part of this big blogcast.
Twisted History.
Oh, exciting.
Gather round, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
So I was told.
Some cool, some not so cool. Just the same. You need to know your Twisted History.
Alrighty then.
You might be quizzed.
Well, I'll take that chance. Well, kids, it was on this day in 1900, the Chicago Canal opened. Now, what this did was it reversed the flow of the Chicago River. So it would flow inland instead of out into Lake Michigan, helping to avoid polluting the lake and instead sharing the city's effluence with America's heartland. Wasn't that considerate? Yeah. Great city fathers. let's see. I think the late Daniel Burnham had something to do with that. And it was on this day in 1974, President Nixon signed a bill lowering the maximum U.S. speed limit to 55 miles an hour in order to conserve gasoline during an OPEC embargo. Unfortunately, the speed limit remained in effect for 22 years. You would think that, You'd only have this thing in effect until the end of the embargo, right? No, that's not the way politicians work. They want to inflict as much misery in your lives as they possibly can. Imagine that, 22 years of pure highway hell.
The worst thing I can do to you is to keep you right here, mister.
Well, Jimmy Carter has been dead long enough now to where we can start speaking the truth about the man. I was kind of in a pukish mood sitting around watching the tributes to the man on the mainstream media because, well, the vast majority of our media is still mainstream, even though the mainstream media holds only about 20% credibility rate with the American public. Okay, so take that at face value. And naturally, they're going to speak fawningly over another Democrat, regardless of how terrible he was. Now, you go to CNN, which is about as left-wing as you're going to find any media organization to be, and along comes their talking head from the Republican side of the spectrum, and that would be Scott Jennings. And there was a CNN panel discussion where Jennings didn't mince words at all when evaluating Carter's legacy, such as it is, describing him as both a terrible president and an even worse ex-president.
He was a terrible president. That's why he lost in a landslide after his one term. And if it's possible, I think he was even a worse ex-president because of his meddling in U.S. foreign policy, because of his saddling up to dictators around the world, because of his vehement views, anti-Israel views, and more than dabbling in anti-Semitism over the years. He often vexed Democrats. Obama didn't even have him speak at his 08 convention. He put Bill Clinton in a terrible foreign policy box on a North Korea nuclear issue. I think he was a guy who had a huge ego and believed that he was uniquely positioned to do all these things, even after the American people had roundly and soundly rejected his leadership. So I respect people who run for president and get elected president, but in his particular case, I think he time and again proved why he was never suited for the office in the first place.
Now, having said that, one of the other panel members, somebody who's obviously a Democrat, had to interject and try to save Jimmy Carter's thrashing in this particular segment on the program. And he jumped in with this, and immediately Scott Jennings had an excellent rebut.
I don't often say this, but Scott, I agree with you to a certain extent. Mm. President Carter was meddlesome with his successors. He forgot sometimes that he still wasn't president. For all the meddlesome behavior as a post-president, which is well documented, I don't think that it outweighs the contribution that he made as a global citizen after he left.
So can I just offer one retort, which is this. In the run-up to the Persian Gulf War, he wrote letters.
Yeah, I know about this.
To all of our allies and to Arab states, asking them to abandon their cooperation and coalition with the United States of America. If it's not treasonous, it's borderline treasonous. And so I hear what you're saying about the humanitarianism, but when you're an ex-president and you have served in that office, I think you have a duty to the United States and only to the United States. And when he did that and other instances, to me, it showed that he cared more about his own legacy than he did about the country, and I think that is wrong.
Now, Carter's legacy as the 39th president of the United States between, it was from 1977 to 81, has, gee whiz, ever since been a very divisive topic in American politics. And during his presidency, Carter prioritized human rights in U.S. foreign policy, breaking from Cold War real politic, and focusing on pressuring governments with poor records, particularly in Latin America and South Africa. But his administration struggled domestically every single damn day of that god-awful administration. There were economic challenges, including inflation, very, very high inflation. Every time you pulled up to the gas pumps, gas was up another 10 to 15 cents a gallon. Now imagine that. Every time you went in. I mean, at the start of his administration, gas was roughly 39 cents a gallon. And by the time he left office, it was well over a dollar. So there were the economic challenges. The unemployment was the highest since just prior to World War II. There was an energy crisis the whole time, which along with the Iranian hostage crisis naturally contributed to the election of Ronald Reagan. Thank God. Reagan came in and he was an excellent president. And he, if you think about the shape that we were in as a nation, when Ronald Reagan was inaugurated in January of 1981, that man had a tremendous job ahead of him. And he managed to rise to the occasion. He really did. We started to feel some relief in the economy about 2 years into Reagan's administration. And this is in spite of the bust in the oil business, the 1982 oil bust. That didn't last all that long. So by the time 1984 came along for Ronald Reagan's reelection, it was a landslide. It was great. But life under Jimmy Carter was god-awful. There were the gas lines. You had gas literally rationed. It was almost as if we were at war. You could only buy gas every other day. And the day that you could buy gas depended on whether you had an even number license plate or an odd number license plate. And there were fights that broke out sometimes at gas stations. It was just a tremendously awful situation. And Jimmy Carter never once communicated that he even sympathized with us, never felt our pain. Speaking of feeling your pain, Bill Clinton actually referred to Jimmy Carter in Clinton's words. He referred to Jimmy Carter as a treasonous prick. So you got to think about that. You've got, during Clinton's administration, you've got Carter's unauthorized diplomatic efforts in North Korea. And this sparked outrage with one senior official allegedly branding. So it wasn't actually Clinton who called him a treasonous prick. It was one of his top people. But the episode detailed in a National Review report sheds a lot of light on the friction between the two leaders, Jimmy Carter and Bill Clinton. Carter's solo negotiations with North Korea were conducted without prior approval from the Clinton White House. Now, you know, with the egos that have a tendency to run in politics, that really pissed Bill Clinton off. And it left him boxed in. He had to accept a deal he hadn't sanctioned, further complicating U.S. foreign policy. And what made it even worse was the timing of it. So, according to the National Review report, during Clinton's presidency, Carter acted unilaterally to negotiate with North Korea. And this completely blindsided the Clinton administration. See, Carter, accompanied by a CNN film crew, reportedly brokered this agreement, a framework agreement with North Korea, and announced it publicly before consulting with Clinton's team. You don't do that. That is treasonous. I remember I was squawking about that at the time, and nobody did anything about it. Frankly, I think Clinton should have had Carter arrested for that. Anyhow, the sudden announcement left the administration with egg on their face, scrambling, and Clinton was forced to accept the deal and abandon UN sanctions efforts. I mean, Jimmy Carter was, he was one of these people where everything he touched turned to crap. Everything. Nothing good came out of the Carter administration. Nothing. Now, if you lived through his administration, you will remember just after we got into the Reagan administration, there was a complete crash of the savings and loan institution or industry. Savings and loans all over the country just tanked. Well, that happened because of the Carter administration. Because of the god-awful inflation and the high unemployment, home builders couldn't sell homes. So the financial community in that business, the savings and loan institutions, decided to craft this thing called balloon notes. That's when you went in and you found a little community of brand new Fox and Jacobs homes, and you went in and you bought one, and the agreement was that you would pay about $450 a month for your house note for the first 5 years. Then on the fifth year, your balloon note would balloon to nearly double, roughly $900 a month. Well, so many people couldn't handle that. See, that foolish assumption was based on the premise that you were going to get a raise sometime during your first 5 years in that house. Okay? Which, of course, was stupid, given the administration that was in charge at the time. So people just got up and walked out of their houses, left the houses empty, moved out. I don't know how they lived. I don't know if they were able to rent an apartment or what, but they walked on their property. A lot of people went bankrupt. And that destroyed the savings and loan business. And that was another mess that Jimmy Carter created that Ronald Reagan had to deal with. Now, there's a historian by the name of Douglas Brinkley. And he detailed the Clinton administration's anger over Carter's idiotic actions. And one cabinet member allegedly used the inflammatory phrase to describe the former president, you know, a treasonous prick, reflecting the depth, the level of frustration at the time. Brinkley did a book back in 1998, The Unfinished Presidency, and it painted an overwhelmingly positive picture of Carter's post-presidency, but included a particularly surprising account of Carter's actions during the lead-up to the 1990-91 Persian Gulf War. The former president, known for his emphasis on diplomacy and peace-building, reportedly took actions that raised a lot of eyebrows for their unorthodox nature and potential interference with the sitting administration's foreign policy. So you can understand why Bill Clinton and his people felt that Jimmy Carter was a treasonous prick, because he was a prick. I would also like to illustrate for you how bad it was for the Secret Service. The Secret Service felt nothing but disdain from Jimmy Carter. He treated the Secret Service like they're a bunch of grunt idiots. And all those photos you saw of Jimmy Carter supposedly carrying his own baggage That never happened. Those were empty suitcases. He was a photo op man. Anytime he had a good photo op, he would avail himself of it. So, all this love for Jimmy Carter that they're showing on TV and what have you, thank God it's over now. He's been dead long enough. He's been dead less than a week. And so now we can start to pile on. And I think we need to. We need to illustrate what a lousy president he was so that younger generations can learn from this. So, I don't know. It makes me shake my head. I know if you lived through it, you know what I'm talking about. You were there. You understood it, and you understood what a great relief it was to have Ronald Reagan come along afterward and start straightening things out. It took him a good, almost 4 years. It took him a good 2 years and some change to bring the economy back to where we could all see that it was finally on the road to recovery. But as far as diplomacy, it took a full 4 years for Ronald Reagan. But he acted quickly enough to where when it was time to re-elect Ronald Reagan, we re-elected him in a landslide. Thanks to our friends at the Epoch Times, we now have this story that New York police, just on New Year's Eve, identified the woman who was killed after being set on fire at a stopped New York City subway earlier this month. You would have to have been living under a rock not to know about this story. And she has been identified as 57-year-old Debrina Kawam, whose last known address was in Toms River, New Jersey. Now, this has all been confirmed by NYPD, and the PD didn't respond to questions about how the woman was identified or whether or not reports she was homeless were accurate. So no additional information on her was available, but Sebastian Zepeda is 33, is the person accused by prosecutors of lighting the woman on fire. The train was stopped. It was the F train, and it was at Brooklyn's Coney Island Station. And he allegedly then fanned the flames with a shirt, causing her to become engulfed in the blaze. And then he just took a seat on a platform bench and watched as she burned to death. Now, Zepeda's charged with multiple counts of murder as well as an arson charge, with the top charge carrying a maximum sentence of life in prison without parole. Too bad there's no death penalty involved here. And if convicted under federal arson laws for an attack resulting in death, Zepeda could face a sentence of 25 years to life. Federal arson charges for attacks on property used in interstate commerce resulting in injury carry a maximum sentence of 40 years. And you can bet they're probably going to use this charge as well. Meanwhile, a conviction under New York State's first degree murder statute could lead to life in prison without parole, a punishment already more severe than what federal arson laws can provide, believe it or not. Police said Zepeda calmly approached the woman who was sitting motionless in the subway car, so it is assumed that she was asleep at the time, and he just ignited her clothing using a lighter. Apparently, there was no accelerant involved, so she was wearing flammable clothing. And the victim's clothing, according to their report, became engulfed in a matter of seconds. And this was confirmed by NYPD Commissioner Jessica Tisch. His previous reporting had stated the victim was sleeping on the train. So according to the chief of transit, Joseph Galata, he says that's going to be part of the investigation. She's definitely there. She's motionless. So to say, if she's asleep, we're not 100% sure, but it appears that she's motionless. Now, officers who were stationed at the Coney Island Stillwell Avenue subway station responded after smelling smoke and discovered the victim standing inside the train car, fully engulfed. Now, this is where things get a little bit interesting if you like to latch on to certain details, because the reports say she was sitting. And this guy set the fire, and then she's standing. So before she died, she must have awakened and realized at the last few seconds or minutes of her life what was going on. And despite efforts to extinguish the fire, and there were efforts, she was pronounced dead at the scene. And then, of course, then went all the video circulating on social media, and several, I don't know how many different videos were shot, but apparently there were several different accounts as to what happened. But video that's been circulating on social media shows Zepeda sitting on a bench. This is the video that was carried by the New York Post. And he's just sitting on a bench watching the fire. And then he later left the scene, but the cops caught up with him at the 34th Street Herald Square station in Manhattan after a group of teenagers spotted him and called 911. 911, sorry, 911. Your phone doesn't have an 11. Anyhow, Zepeda, who's a Guatemala national, and he was deported in 2018 and illegally re-entered the United States with this open border of ours. Thank you, Joe Biden, and you bastards in the Biden administration. And Mayorkas, he should be in prison. God, I hope they prosecute these people. Anyhow, this guy, Zepeda, is being held at Rikers Island. Not a great place to be. But my thanks to Bill Pan over at Epic Times. And I hate to admit it, but the Associated Press also contributed to the report. I had to use both of them to put this thing together. But NYPD initially said the victim was 61 years old, but that was referenced in an earlier version of this account. And apparently she's been confirmed as 57 years old. But here again, all this mess with these illegal aliens pouring across our border, and then now this incident of what just happened the other night in New Orleans. It's sickening. If you don't understand that politics is largely show business, then you haven't been paying any attention. I mean, it's show business to the nth degree, and it always has been. This isn't anything new. My God, where do you think all this pomp and circumstance and ceremonialism and pageantry on the part of the royal family or all royalties, not just in the UK, but all around the world? You've got royalties all over the place, and you get these parades. Nobody could parade and rally better than the Nazis. How do you think they became as powerful as they did back in the 1930s? And they struck at a time when the world economy was at its worst. So they got out there and had all these flashy parades and trying to remember who was the designer of most of those Nazi uniforms. Man, they were sharp dressers. Say what you will about them. They were sharp dressers. And then look at the horrors they created. So, yeah, politics is largely showbiz. And Donald Trump announced just the other day, it was Tuesday, that Justin Caporale, I think that's how you pronounce his last name, it's Caporale, who is the guy credited with organizing his campaign event featuring the garbage truck. Well, anyhow, this guy, Justin Caporale, is going to take on a new presidential executive producer role, assisting with major events and public appearances when Trump's second term begins in just a couple of weeks. And, let's see here. Here's what he wrote. Here's what Trump wrote in a Truth Social post. He says, Justin Caporale has been with me right from the beginning of a very incredible journey, helping to produce our historic rallies and events, including the Republican National Convention, Madison Square Garden, McDonald's commercial, and even my seriously viral garbage truck ride. So there you go. Anyhow, this guy Caporale previously served as director of operations under former First Lady Melania Trump, where his duties included managing the day-to-day logistical stuff regarding the East Wing, focusing on events and planning foreign and domestic travel. And he also previously worked as a lead advance representative in the White House Office of Presidential Advance, whatever that is. Sounds important, though, doesn't it? And as the senior lead representative for advance and operations for Trump's presidential campaign. This is all according to the official statement, okay? I'm not making any of this up. And in 2015, this guy Caporale Caporal, launched a consulting firm with a focus on advocacy efforts, event management, and strategy solutions. And before that, he served as the National Director of Operations for Concerned Veterans for America. So Trump wrote in his Truth Social post, he says, once he finishes what will be our magnificent inauguration presentation, Justin will continue to serve my external operation as executive producer for major events and public appearances. Congratulations, Justin. Keep up the great work, he says. Now, knowing what a loose cannon Donald Trump can be, and then you look at this guy, Justin Caporal, and the great rallies that he's put on, anybody who can handle Donald Trump the way he obviously has got to be good. I would love to learn more about this guy, just out of idle curiosity. But he's credited with masterminding Trump's garbage truck appearance. Man, did that make headlines ever. Man, that was back in October already. And it was a response to President Biden's comments during an October 29th Zoom call with Voto Latino, a nonprofit aimed at registering Latinos to vote. And that's where Biden referenced people like you and me. We referenced us as garbage. And that was in a vain attempt to discredit that comedian who spoke at one of the Trump rallies. I think that was the Madison Square Garden thing. And the guy referenced Puerto Rico as nothing but garbage. But Puerto Ricans didn't take offense because they understood the inside joke on that. So the White House, after that brouhaha, said that Biden's remarks were aimed at the jokes and that he wasn't referring to Trump supporters as garbage. Well, it's just too little too late. The damage was already done. And so Justin Caporal capitalized on it and put Donald Trump in a garbage truck. The video was shot. It went viral all over the entire World Wide Web. And the result was a landslide victory for Mr. Trump. As we go into the comedy corner, I want to mention that most, not all, but most of the comedians you hear in this segment are from a program or a channel on YouTube called Dry Bar Comedy, which it's a great organization out of Provo, Utah. And if ever you want to hear more of one of the comedians you hear on the comedy corner, then all you have to do is just remember their name when I mention it and type it into the search bar on YouTube, and you'll get a lot more. This fella is hilarious. A lot of his act is visual, too. So you might want to type the name Jason Russell into the search bar on YouTube. You'll enjoy this guy.
I hate racism because they hate you for what you are. And that's stupid because none of us in this room chose what we are, right? Yeah. It's not a rally. Calm down there, sir. Although, if we were going to have a rally, I'd want you to head it up. I hate racism. I hate racism for one reason only, because they hate you for what you are, and that's stupid, because none of us in this room chose where we are, right? Before I was born, I was not standing in line somewhere going, oh, my God. Oh, I am not standing in this white line. It's too long! What? I don't care if they're getting Yeti coolers or not. What? No, I'm not getting a Native American line. Everybody keeps taking all their stuff. I hate going into bathrooms. I think guys would agree. We don't like going into bathrooms. It's just weird for us. You ladies love going into bathrooms. They put all kinds of stuff in there for you. Trees. Candles. A bench. What in God's name would you need a bench in a guy's bathroom for? When you go in these bathrooms days, they will make the smartest person look like a complete moron trying to get the water on. There is one thing I love about bathrooms. Is the only thing I can find that I love about public bathrooms is foam soap. Don't you love You never know where you're going to get it. It's always a surprise, like a present from a stranger.
Make it a terrific day. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's Bombastic Blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.